This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. As the nation watched President Obama's inauguration, another critical news story hit the wires. An online payment processor admitted its security system had been breached, and millions of credit and debit cards may have been leaked to the black market. It is not clear how long the problem at Heartland Security Systems has been going on, or just how many unwitting card holders may be affected. How common are security breaches, and how can we protect ourselves? And what should the Obama administration be doing to make sure consumers and national security are safe? We continue our crime series now with a look at cybercrime, its impacts, and its deterrence. Joining us to shed some light on the darker corners of online law breaking are Tom Kellerman. He is the VP of Security Awareness at Core Security Technologies and former Senior Data Risk Management Specialist with the World Bank Treasury Security Team, and Kim Zetter. She is a reporter with Wired and specializes in privacy and security issues. Welcome, both of you, to News and Notes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kim, let's start with you. You've been following this Heartland Payment Systems security breach story for Wired. Give us the brief background on what this is about.
Well, we don't have a lot of information yet, and what information we do have seems to keep changing every time Heartland talks to another reporter. But essentially what has happened is that an intruder got into Heartland's internal network and put sniffing software on the system to grab data as it's processed. And when I say sniffing software, it essentially acts like you would wiretap a phone system in order to listen to conversations. This is on the computer network, and it's grabbing the data communications as it's going over the network. In this case, they grabbed credit card numbers and expiration dates as it was being transmitted through the system and as payment systems was seeking authorization for the transactions.
Now, Tom, you were the top risk management specialist at the World Bank. This sounds like a massive breach, but how unusual is it?
It's not that unusual. The reason why you don't hear about it more often is because of the reputational risk and the reality that most organizations aren't aware of when they've been breached, because most sophisticated criminal syndicates and hacker crews remain persistent and clandestine in their presence on a network. They maintain these back doors, these secret passageways that remain resilient within most networks. One important study was done by the Department of Justice in 2006 that noted that 2 out of 3 American businesses was impacted by cybercrime in that year.
Now, it just seems as if we hear about these things sometimes, Kim, but most of the time we just are victimized without knowing that we're being victimized or without having any real recourse. Is that right?
Well, there are breach laws now, and you know we have, I guess, California to thank for that, for launching that initiative. We started to learn about these breaches after the California law was passed, and I think the first one was, well, we had a choice point and card systems, which were both hacked, I think, in 2005. And those were the first real ones that we started to hear about. And then we have, I think, laws in about 44 states now that require organizations, when they are breached, to notify customers that it's occurred. And that's really the source of the information that we're getting out. It's really the only reason we're hearing about these now.
Are we finding, Tom, that the people who are perpetrating these crimes online, are they being caught and punished?
No, most are not. This is due to the fact that it's very difficult to attribute attacks in today's environment. Many of these hackers use Eastern European or Southeast Asian countries that have very little law enforcement capacity, let alone cybercrime laws, to enforce these realities, as well as many of these hacker syndicates are using other people's computers whom they've compromised and turned into zombie computers to launch attacks. And so the original source of the attack can never be attributed to the end.
Well, Tom, let me follow up with you on this. What are your top 3 tips, shall we say, for people to protect themselves from cyber fraud?
First of all, make sure that your computer is up to date with the latest operating software and virus scanner technology. Limit your use of wireless. And also, change your mother's maiden name to some other password on all of your financial accounts. That way, when and inevitably your data is stolen, you can then misinform the hackers so they can't set up a new line of credit in your name. Lastly, expect more from the businesses and banks that you do business with. Consumers should demand greater access control and authentication to their accounts, something beyond passwords, And they should also demand that major corporations and banks they do business with conduct regular security assurance testing on their networks and all third parties that connect to those networks.
Now, Kim, Heartland Payment Systems is just one example, but you recently covered a hacking story involving the microblogging site Twitter. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, what happened there?
Well, this really speaks to what Tom is talking about, is requiring companies to, you know, have better security hygiene. In this case, Twitter had an administrator. She handled customer service, and her password was happiness. And what a hacker did was he applied a computer program, which is called a password cracker, and it basically went through a dictionary of words to try and make attempts to get into the system, and he turned it on overnight. So it's processing millions of words through a dictionary to try and get in the system. In the morning, he had it. The reason this was possible was because the administrator used an easy password, and also Twitter didn't set up its system so that it would block out someone after a certain number of attempts to get in.
So could this sort of hack have greater consequences?
Well, yeah, in this case, we're, you know, pretty lucky that it was minor and that the hacker kind of exploited it very publicly. So it was known about, you know, within minutes or within an hour, I think Twitter knew about it because he publicized it. But this could have occurred in the middle of the election. Barack Obama's official Twitter was hacked and taken over by hackers. And a lot of news agencies use Twitter to send out messages. And, you know, one example that's similar of what could have happened, back in September, there was a six-year-old news story about United Airlines bankruptcy that got passed out on the Bloomberg News Network by mistake. And within minutes, about 15 million stocks of United were sold, and the stock dropped, I think, 75% in a day. So that's an example of, you know, the danger that could occur in an attack like this.
Let me remind our listeners that you are listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, and if you are just tuning in with us, we are talking about cybersecurity, and we are talking to Tom Kellerman, VP of Security Awareness at Core Security Technologies. He is also the former Senior Data Risk Management Specialist with the World Bank Treasury Security Team, and who we just heard, Kim Zetter. She is a reporter with Wired, specializing in cybersecurity threats. Tom, we're currently reeling from a financial crisis with its roots in the housing market, but it's estimated that 200 million folks out there could be victims of identity theft. Many not even aware of it. Has technology made this problem worse because of our financial crisis?
Well, the lessons that we should have learned from the financial crisis were there was a lack of due diligence and a lack of real risk assessment and risk management. And the same applies to the implementation of technology. Most leaders within corporate America and government have seen technology as this wonderful mechanism by which they can increase efficiencies, productivity, and access to data, when in fact technology is a double-edged sword. And the 200 million Americans who have had their identities stolen, most of which are not aware, but what they need to recognize is when your identity has been stolen, regardless of the fraudulent lines of credit that have been established in your name today, in the underground economy, they sell and transfer your credentials to other people who then try to do the same thing to you over and over again. The real credit crisis someday, as it will be unveiled, will be the fraudulent lines of credit that have been set up in Americans' names due to the fact that major corporations and banks they've dealt with have been victims of data breaches.
You know, we've been talking so far primarily about domestic cyber crime and identity theft, things of the sort. I want to talk about national security and how the cyber crime impacts that. Tom, you were a part of a working group of cybersecurity experts which issued a report called Securing Cyberspace in the 44th Presidency. Reading excerpts of it, you know, it was pretty scary, to be quite honest. What were the findings?
Well, one of the most critical findings is that there are 108 countries out there that have dedicated divisions within their militaries that are targeting U.S. corporations and U.S. government assets to maintain persistence and to conduct both industrial and traditional espionage against U.S. Companies and government agencies. More importantly, it was noted through our evaluation of the threat that critical infrastructures like water, electricity, pharmaceutical productions, financial systems, government services can all be turned off, compromised, and or remotely controlled by individuals using laptops overseas.
Kim, I understand you're familiar with this report. What stood out in it for you?
Well, one of the more interesting things, ironic things, was that it talks specifically about requiring the government to use more secure software. And, of course, one of the chairs of the commission was Scott Charney, who's Vice President of Trustworthy Computing in Microsoft. So it's a bit ironic and I think welcome information that a commission would come out with that requirement. I don't know if you saw the story this morning about the White House workers who arrived to their desk this morning and found six-year-old Microsoft operating systems on their computers and a lot of outdated applications. So, you know, getting the government up to speed on security practices is a really, really good aim.
Let me follow that up with you with this, because as you say, in government, everything from national security to daily communication is done through digital pathways. But how protected actually are governments from cyber attacks? I'll ask you first, Kim, and then I'll ask Tom to step in on that also.
How protected are government systems from foreign attacks?
Well, actually,
from any attack,
foreign and domestic. Let's look at it both ways.
I think it's pretty clear that we're not very protected at all. You know, we hear about the breaches like the Heartland because they're involving consumers. We only get vague information from the government when they experience breaches, and often there's a political spin to it. The trend right now is to blame the Chinese for every attack that occurs. We never really know the extent of the attack. We never really know how they target the Chinese. But we know that, intruders are getting into the systems and they're not secure. So, yeah, we're wide open.
So, Tom, how big a problem is it? And could something like what happened between Russia and Ossetia happen involving the United States?
Yes, it can. I would echo the comments that have been made. I would stress the reality is that we are currently losing this cyber war. The reason why the commission was put together by Congressman Langevin, who is the chair of the Subcommittee on Cybersecurity for Congress, was because of the breaches at the Department of Commerce, Department of State, Department of Homeland Security, and the Defense Department 4 years ago. Organized, staged breaches that allowed nation-state enemies of the U.S. to literally reside within systems in a clandestine fashion and to sniff and eavesdrop on all traffic moving in and out of those systems for years. And one of the most prevalent cases that your listeners can listen to and look at is the Titan Rain case. If you Google the words Titan Rain, you'll see it was an FBI investigation into a major Chinese attack on DoD systems that stole reams of classified data on how we defend ourselves militarily.
So, Kim, we have a tech-savvy president now in the White House. Do you think that his presence alone will help provide perhaps greater attention to be paid to these kinds of technological security concerns?
I think his attention will do that, but I think also in general the administration has finally woken up to the problem. I mean, this was something that, Dick Clark was talking about when he was in the administration years ago. We were talking about this in 2000 before 9/11, and money wasn't being, assigned to it. There was no budget. There was no attention paid to it. It really wasn't taken seriously until recently, and then President Bush signed an initiative last January that really sort of put it on the map at this point. So it's very welcome that the attention is being paid at this point.
There's been some talk, of course, about Obama appointing a cybersecurity czar. Do you think that a cabinet-level position is required for this going forward, Kim? And then I'm going to ask Tom the same thing.
I think that it's an effort to show the seriousness of this and to combine it not only with, we're not just talking about, ordinary government desktops and things. We're talking about defense systems and everything, as Tom was talking about. So, yeah, it does really reach that level, I think.
Do you think we should have that, Tom, or do you think we will have that?
I think we will and we must have that in order to begin to defend ourselves properly. And this goes beyond the civilian and military networks. It also reaches into the critical infrastructures of electricity and finance and telecommunications that are become very much part and parcel of national defense and economic security. We have to recognize that the Internet's a giant aquatic space, and if you can pollute any segment of that water, you can compromise the entire estuary itself.
Would a position be one that you would think should be relegated to having to be changed every 4 years as a new administration comes in, or should it be a position that's, if there is such a thing, immune to those kinds of political changes?
I feel that it should change. I mean, it should evolve, but realistically, it's a non-political issue. This is an issue of economic security and national security, and one that's going to take fundamental, drastic changes in behavior across both the government and the private sector in order to begin to stem the bleeding.
Here's my final question for the both of you. Much has been made of the president and his BlackBerry. Now there's talk of him possibly using a PDA with a higher level of encryption. I believe it's called a smartphone. It's a smartphone that's called the BarackBerry. Should we be concerned about the president communicating on these devices, Kim?
Well, all of the security experts I've spoken with about it say yes. They are shaking their heads and wondering, you know, what is the White House thinking? So the White House has assured everyone that they've installed a higher grade of encryption. My understanding is the White House BlackBerries operate under a private network. Maybe Tom has a little more information about that, but everyone that I've spoken with says, you know, it's a big mistake.
I got about 30 seconds, Tom. So it can be done, but should it be done?
No, it can't be done. There's no way to secure wireless PDAs. There's no full way to do it. Even the Pentagon brand, the use of them for classified systems. This is a huge mistake if it moves forward. You don't want the enemies of our country becoming omniscient. That's what the president is thinking and doing.
I appreciate it very much. Very good information. Thank you. That was Tom Kellerman, VP of Security Awareness at Core Security Technologies. He's also the former Senior Data Risk Management Specialist with the World Bank Treasury Security Team. And Kim Zetter, she is a reporter with Wired, specializing in cybersecurity threats. She joined us from the studios of Youth Radio in Oakland, California.